We don't know the exact cause of the problem yet until we pull the piles that have been split.
Structural trouble at Port McKenzie frustrates Mat-Su Valley officials. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, blizzard conditions are predicted for a wide swath of coastal and interior Alaska.
Potentially, we could see over the next week or so at least another foot of snow.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Two sled dogs are dead after the team of Yukon Quest and Iditarod veteran Sebastian Schnula was hit by a vehicle outside Fairbanks. In a post yesterday, the 2009 Quest champion says his team was struck by a vehicle traveling at full highway speed while crossing Chena Hot Springs Road at night. Schnula says one of the dogs died shortly after the crash and the other could not be saved by veterinarians. He says the accident occurred at a well-marked road crossing with good visibility, noting that the front-running three pairs of dogs were wearing LED-lighted collars. Schnula says the driver is a local person who is aware of the crossing. Schnula says the driver feels bad about what happened and that they are working to get through this together. He says the other dogs in the team are okay. Blizzard and severe weather warnings remain in effect for communities on the northwest coast of Alaska as a winter storm continues to bring wind, heavy snow, and in some cases, rain. The National Weather Service says visibility in Nome was reduced to near zero at times because of blowing snow. Southwest winds today are predicted to increase to 25 to 40 miles per hour with gusts to 60, with 4 more inches of snow in the forecast. Similar forecasts were issued for Norton Sound, Seward Peninsula, Lower Yukon, and Middle Yukon communities. The storm also hit the Fairbanks area hard, where there's been more than a foot of accumulation since Thursday afternoon. National Weather Service meteorologist Scott Berg says there will be a lull in the storm during the day today.
I would take advantage as soon as you can today to try to move some of the snow, because you'll be moving even more tomorrow.
Berg says a second storm wave is forecast to begin tonight.
Potentially 4 to 7 more inches of snow overnight tonight. However, with that will be winds potentially gusting to 50 miles an hour over the hilltops and possibly 35 to 40 miles per hour here in town. And there is a really high potential right now for blow-down trees and potential power outages overnight tonight.
Berg says the long-range forecast calls for a continued chance of snow.
Potentially, we could see over the next week or so at least another foot of snow.
Berg notes that the 10.4 inches of snow tallied at Fairbanks Airport yesterday nearly doubled the previous daily record for December 29th, adding that Fairbanks has erased this season's snow deficit and is now near normal for this time of year. The National Weather Service says a blizzard warning is in effect into Saturday afternoon for Kotzebue and villages on St. Lawrence Island and along the Bering Strait. The warning also includes Wainwright, Akasuk, Point Lay, and Cape Lisburn. NWS reports visibility will be near zero at times, with the potential for whiteout conditions making travel difficult. Southwest winds of 35 to 45 are predicted, gusting to 55. Winds should decrease by Saturday afternoon. Recurring structural problems at Port McKenzie's barge dock are adding costs to the Mat-Su Borough's already tight budget. As Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer reports, port officials are puzzled as to the cause of the damage, which seems to be located in a specific area, while a series of repair jobs have not solved the problem.
Despite numerous fixes, a structural component of Port McKenzie's barge dock keeps failing. Since the damage to an engineering brace, called a Y, was first discovered in summer of 2015, the Matanuska Susitna Borough has spent millions of dollars on repairs to the dock. Port Director Mark Van Dongen says even after two attempts to fix the damage, work that spanned the fall of 2015 and spring of this year, another problem appeared this fall.
We had a failure in one of the new sheet piles that was installed in the April, May, June time frame in 2016. The sheet pile that connected to the new Y-W-Y-E that connects two cells, the sheet pile immediately behind the Y, which connects to a tail wall, that new sheet split, and then the new Y subsequently formed a crack in it as well.
So the new Y installed only this year has cracked again. Van Dongen blames a failure of some of the sheet pilings also installed this year. A temporary fix last year cost upwards of $40,000, but this year's temporary fix could cost more, according to Van Dongen.
October is when this first tail wall sheet split and failed. We've taken temporary action to stabilize the dock. It was only about $60,000 or $70,000 to do the temporary work that we needed to do to keep the dock together until the ice melts in the spring and we're able to do the final repair.
Van Dongen says a permanent fix scheduled for next year could cost $1.5 million. This year's temporary fix and next year's repair job are an encore performance because the initial damage to the barge dock was noted in 2015, mended in a hurry, and was presumed to be permanently repaired this year. A $2.5 million emergency loan from the borough's land management fund paid for the job. Van Dongen says the work was done for about $2.1 million. On top of that, elements of a cathodic protection system which protects piling erosion on the dock failed this year. The borough sought insurance compensation for $169,000 in costs related to the work. Van Dongen says insurance has paid that bill because the damage was discovered before the expiration of the warranty on the initial installment. Van Dongen and Matsu Borough Manager John Moosey both say insurance reimbursements could pay back the costs of the barge dock repairs, but those insurance payments are not certain, Moosey told the Assembly in mid-November.
Fort McKenzie, and I know we've had insurance agents out there to kind of go through. They have examined it at low tide. We are sending some more agents out there guarding the buckling of the outsides.
Moosey said more recently, there is still no word from insurance adjusters. The cause of the most recent damage, the split in the sheet piling at the barge dock, is not known. Van Dongen says he purchased the steel sheet piling from the port of Anchorage at a cost of $350,000. He says he can't say if the pilings themselves are defective without an engineer's report.
We don't know the exact cause of the problem yet until we pull the piles that have been split. Once we pull them and can study them, we can determine if perhaps we hit a rock on the way down and started a crack, or if the interlocks came apart, or we'll test the hardness of the steel on the sheet pile to see if it met specification. It might have been a deficiency in the pile itself. We won't know this until the spring when we pull the damaged sheet pile and the damaged Y.
Van Dongen says there's no warranty on the work done so far because the sheet pilings were provided by the owner, not by the contractor. Both Cruise Construction and Orion Construction have worked on repairing the port's dock problems, working under no-bid contracts. Port Director Van Dongen says seismic activity could be a factor in causing the damage, so could ice. Van Dongen says the temporary fixes are successful for a time because winter's ice holds the gravel pushing at the sheet piling in place until spring thaw. Van Dongen says he won't know for sure what next year's repair job will cost until an engineer's estimate comes in. He says the next step is to approach the Matsu Assembly for money before he can put out a bid for the job. He says with the one insurance payment banked and the remainder of the emergency money appropriated by the borough in 2015 still available, the port's budget can probably pay for the majority of next year's work. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Facebook gets in hot water with Santa Claus.
Facebook is now, since they restored my access, is off the naughty list, but they're not yet on the nice list.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
Bogoslav volcano is still cranky. It started erupting again shortly before midnight and sent an ash plume about 20,000 feet into the air by early this morning. The eruption caused the Alaska Volcano Observatory to issue its highest alert level for aircraft. Bogoslav Island is an important breeding ground for marine mammals and seabirds, making it the perfect place to monitor how life responds to volcanic destruction. Zoe Sobel from Alaska's Energy Desk has more on how scientists will start by mapping geographic change.
Bogoslav Island is tiny, but it's hard to say how tiny because the shape and size of the island are changing pretty much constantly since the eruption started in mid-December. And while recent eruptions have added new land, Chris Way Thomas of the U.S. Geological Survey says that on the whole, the roughly mile-long island has shrunk.
It looks quite a bit different than it did before. It seemed very susceptible to wave erosion, so deposits that formed, you know, hours ago are immediately being attacked by the ocean.
With continued seismic unrest, the island is in a constant state of flux. But Way Thomas can document that change with commercial satellite data that he turns into maps. This creates an opportunity to study how an island and its ecosystem respond to volcanic activity.
When their habitat is altered, you know, what do they do? Where do they go? Does it impact the species significantly? How have these species dealt with these sorts of things?
Way Thomas says research in this natural laboratory applies to both natural and man-made disturbances.
And the big question that everyone has is, well, if this happens, how long will it take to recover, right? If we put this mine in here and do this, or if this spills, how long does it take for nature to come back?
But for that answer, we'll just have to wait. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
A certain North Pole resident had a surprising Christmas morning when he discovered his Facebook account had been deactivated. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports on the strange circumstances leading to Santa Claus disappearing from Facebook.
North Pole resident Santa Claus, yes, that's his legal name, has had the name for about 11 years. He was elected to North Pole City Council last year and also served as chair of the North Pole Chamber of Commerce. He says every now and then he has interesting issues with ordering items over the phone and disbelief from various officials. He was surprised, however, when Facebook notified him that his account had been shut down because Facebook didn't believe him. Santa got the notice on Christmas Day.
I don't think it was ironically. I think it's very suspect, personally.
Santa began corresponding with a Facebook worker named Elliot to rectify the situation. When sending his driver's license was not sufficient enough identification, he later sent a copy of his passport and even a copy of the letter from the governor appointing him to the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, all to clarify that his name was indeed Santa Claus and that he lived in North Pole, Alaska on Santa Claus Lane. The mistake prompted Santa to put Elliot, Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg on the naughty list. Eventually, the company recognized they had made an error and restored Santa's account. However, he wasn't told of the correction.
They recognized to a reporter that they had made a mistake, and that was that. But no, they didn't even tell me I had access restored to my page. I found that out through the reporter.
But even though Facebook didn't tell him directly, Santa is thankful for his community, both in close proximity and online, in their quest to rectify the error.
My takeaway is that I'm blessed to be in a small community where friends and neighbors will gather around, in addition to my several hundred thousand folks on Facebook, to help right a wrong, perceived or real.
Although he was upset with Facebook at first, Santa says they're not on the naughty list anymore.
Facebook is now, since they restored my access, is off the naughty list, but they're not yet on the nice list. If they'd like to be on the nice list, they could actually put a verification checkmark badge on my Facebook page. That would be very helpful and greatly appreciated, and I would be happy to have that in lieu of a direct apology.
Santa says he doesn't expect a, quote, behemoth company like Facebook to apologize, but he's grateful for his loyal Facebook followers that total close to 300,000 for showing him support. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, our favorite segments from 2016. Traditional dancers that bring Bollywood to Alaska, an Alaskan museum that leaves you hammered, and sharing a name with the spaceman, Alaska's own David Bowie. We take a look back at a few of our favorite AKs from 2016. First up, from April 15th, a story about an unusual group of dancers who brought a taste of Bollywood to Alaska. Here's Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer.
It's dress rehearsal time at the Alaska Performing Arts Center. The Atwood Theater is empty, but on stage, dancers dressed in long, shiny purple skirts and colorful blouses twirl for a few minutes, then stop. One dancer speaks to the group, then gestures from the stage to the sound man in his booth. It's the afternoon before their performance, and the music and lighting cues have to be just right. Despite the traditional Hindi music, the woman is speaking Russian because Maori dance group hails from the town of Petrosavosk, a community closer to Finland than it is to Moscow. Sanjay Talwar with the Asian Alaskan Cultural Center says an India-Russia connection is not uncommon.
We have lots of filmmakers, they go over to Russia to shoot Hindi films, and it's about a little bit over 3 hours flight from New Delhi to Moscow. And our India culture in Russia is pretty big.
Neil Bergava, president of the Cultural Center, says residents of Mother Russia's subarctic climate are eager to embrace spicy, color-drenched Indian culture.
Bollywood films are very famous in Russia.
As if on cue, a singer picks up the microphone. She's singing a song in Hindi. Talwar says he's impressed by the accuracy of how the singers and dancers are interpreting his cultural heritage. Now with sound and lighting to their liking, the dancers regroup and begin their intricate movements to an unmistakably Indian beat. And Maori represents India well, Talwar says.
And have the movements and have the expression, you have to kind of know the Hindi words, the lyrics, and they are doing a pretty good job.
Dancer Anastasia Basante says she's been with Maori for about 19 years and that she's learned everything she knows about Indian dance with the troupe and from the leader, Vera F. Grafova.
Because she really has a God gift. I can't explain it any other way. Just she felt it from her childhood that she can dance, that she feels music, that she just can't live without this art and culture.
Maori has been teaching and performing dance for 3 decades and has traveled the world.
Another of our favorite AK stories of 2016, an unusual museum in Haines hits the nail on the head for people with a liking of the simple and the unusual. From August 26th, here's Alaska Public Media's Jillian Rogers.
You know, it easily could have been saws.
That's Hammer Museum founder, Dave Paul.
In fact, we won't even go there because I've got a big saw thing going on too.
He says he didn't have a clue that a tourist attraction would be the end game of his hammer collection, which he started decades ago. The museum features 2,000 hammers on display, and that's not even all of them.
But, you know, I think the combination of the variety, the collectability, you know, I had about a hammers for my own use before I even had any thought of collecting. And then the history really was what wrapped it all up. And there seems like there's a lot more history in a hammer. There's a lot of history in saws, too, but the hammer was man's first tool. It's the king of tools. That's what they say.
The museum, nestled in a cozy spot just off Main Street and guarded by a 19-foot replica hammer, opened in 2002. It became a nonprofit a couple of years later. Since then, Hammer Museum t-shirts and trinkets emblazoned with cheeky sayings like, "Nailed it," and "I got hammered at the Hammer Museum," fly off the shelves in the summer months. On a busy Wednesday, cruise ship passengers crowd into the small space and marvel at the collection.
Welcome to the Hammer Museum.
Oh, we are happy to be here.
Oh, good.
And yeah, in case you missed that, MC Hammer is playing in the background.
Stop. Hammer time. Go with the flow. It is sin.
To enhance the atmosphere on Wednesdays, the museum's busiest day of the week, they play Hammer-related songs and MC Hammer. Gloria and Mark Olson are perusing the collection. They're cruise ship passengers from Battleground, Washington.
I love it.
He said, I'm going to take hundreds of pictures here.
How can there be this many different types of hammers?
Most of the specimens belong to Dave Paul, but some have been donated from around the world. On average, the Hammer Heaven sees about 5,000 visitors each summer. Between admission sales, it's $5 to get in, t-shirt profits, and grants, the museum makes enough to keep Reed employed for about half the year. The quirky venue pretty much markets itself, but a January spot on the quiz show Jeopardy definitely helped boost the museum and the town. In the category Offbeat Museums, the $200 clue was Haines, Alaska's Museum of This Tool features exhibits on handle making and five ways not to hit your fingers. The guy who buzzed in got it wrong. He said knife. But folks in Haines were bursting with pride after their 15 minutes of fame. Haines has the only museum dedicated to hammers in the United States. A quick Google search reveals that there are other exhibits around the nation that offer displays of tools, but nothing touches the Hammer Museum here.
Our final favorite AK story of the year comes to us from Anchorage. In January, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes was reeling from the loss of one of his favorite singers, the legendary punk glam rocker David Bowie. Hughes Googled his name, expecting to find info and songs from the late singer. But what he found instead was another David Bowie, living in Anchorage. We talked to the man who shared such a famous name.
Like a lot of 15-year-olds growing up in Connecticut, there was a stretch of time where I was obsessed with David Bowie.
Time takes a cigarette.
After the singer's death, I was curious if he'd ever come to Alaska, but I got sidetracked when Google informed me that there is a different David Bowie, still living very close by, and in fact, extremely receptive to a telephone call out of the blue.
Like I tell my students every semester, I don't expect you to end up pronouncing my name right. It's fine. I will answer to either. But just so that you know, it's Bowie.
Bowie studies language, particularly the subtle regional differences that shape vowels, like that O in the middle of his name. That's an alphabetic anomaly that's particular to his upbringing in southern Maryland.
In most of the United States, it's Bowie. But in Maryland and eastern and central Texas, it's Bowie.
Besides that name, Bowie bears little resemblance to Bowie. He's 45, has glasses and spiky brown hair, and is wearing a silver bow tie. The floor of his office is covered with collapsed heaps of linguistics books. He was born in 1970, just on the cusp of the English singer's rise to American fame. Bowie says his parents weren't hip enough to even know that they were consigning their son to a difficult few decades of jokes, chuckles, chortles, jests, and I presume a good amount of bullying, too. Bowie didn't listen to the music, even resented it a little bit. He was going to change his name at 18, but then, like many young Americans, his identity flipped when he got to college.
And suddenly sharing the name of a celebrity was kind of fun. I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to own this.
Not only did he start listening to Bowie, he started caring, developing opinions on whole albums and eras of the performer's career.
Which is my favorite Bowie period? I think it changes. Absolutely no pun intended.
Bowie studied linguistics in college. The way that he tells it, it was sort of an arbitrary decision that gradually morphed into an academic career. By graduate school, he was drawn to the ways that dialects differ within religious communities.
Looking at actually Amish teenagers when they do the Rumspringazeit, where they go out into the community, and looking what happens linguistically.
That project never quite materialized, but the line of inquiry brought him to Utah, then Florida, and eventually Alaska. Since then, he's developed an interest in how English has transformed in a place that it's really only existed for about a century.
There's a few scattered things here and there, but very little really on Alaskan English, and vanishingly little on pronunciation, which is my focus.
His dream is to one day have a dialect atlas for Alaska, something that could take decades or even outlast him. Bowie, like Bowie, is a bit of a rule breaker, albeit with phonemes and syntax rather than genre and gender bending. He cares deeply about sound, less for the technical specifics of a sentence or a consonant or a song note than the effect that it has on the listener.
At some level, I just kind of enjoy music to match a mood. I mean, right immediately before we had this interview, I switched Pandora on and I was listening to very, very angry old school rap because that really worked for the moment.
And in that, Bowie is maybe just one little vowel sound away from a performer who always aimed to leave an impression.
Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ellen Lockyer, Jillian Rogers, Zachariah Hughes, and Sean Dugan. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron, and Happy New Year.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Zoe Sobel in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Ron Zastro. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a safe, happy new year, Alaskans. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
GCI, keeping Alaskans connected to live the life they choose. GCI is an Alaska-born and raised telecommunications company and a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.